This week's episode of the FitCast is brought to you by TurboNesTraining.com, BlackStarLabs.com, and by RobertsonTrainingSystems.com. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the FitCast, FitCast episode number 54. My name is Kevin Larrabee and we have a whole new show for you this week. And by new show, I don't just mean new content. We have a new co-host and we also have a whole new format for the show. So I'm going to introduce everyone and then we'll just introduce our new co-host. So first off, Tony Gentlecore of GentlecoreTraining.com. How you doing, Tony?
Good, I'm well. How are you?
Fantastic. Next up is Jimmy Smith of JimmySmithTraining.com. What's up, Jimmy?
What's up, Kev? How are you?
Good. I'm sorry you had to miss the beach. I got a couple phone calls from some women down in Connecticut. Pretty pissed off. They're mad.
See, I was angry. It wasn't good weather. I was mad.
Yeah, but I told them that you just faxed some pictures with your shirt off, something like that.
Oh,
so we'll just leave it at that. Keith Scott of KeithScottTraining.com. What's up, Keith?
Hey, Kev. How you doing?
Fantastic. And good. Last but not least, our very new co-host. We had some recommendations to get Jen on the show, and I'm just so really pumped. I said I was jazzed before the show, and I'm going to stick with that. So I'm jazzed to have Jen Heath as a new co-host on the FitCast. Welcome, Jen.
Thanks, Kevin. What's up? How are you doing?
I'm doing great. And like I said, we have you on as a new co-host. We have now four. I guess we have five of us now, not four. But we have five of us here. And thanks to you, we're actually going to be having the input of a woman on the show, which I think is so important. I'm guessing it's got to be pretty close to almost 50% of our listeners are women, because women are into health and fitness just as much as men are these days. So, I mean, seriously, it's great to have you on board, and hopefully we're going to have a great couple episodes in the future.
I'm sure we will. Thanks for having me.
Well, guys, before we jump into the show, first I want to talk about the new additions that we're going to have. First off, let's talk about the website before we jump into how the show is going to change. Starting this Monday, pretty much the day that you listen to this most likely, we're going to have an article on the website for every day of the week, Monday through Friday, from myself, Keith Scott, Tony Gentlecore, Jimmy Smith, and Jen Heath, obviously the co-host of the show, so I don't know why I did the last names.
Yeah.
Sorry. But we're going to have new content for you every day. So, for example, I have an article going up tomorrow that's talking all about mistakes that beginners make, because I know we still do have some beginners that listen to the show that are new to fitness. And I mean, right on, it's great that you're jumping on board the health and fitness bandwagon, I guess, per se, and we hope to keep you on there. But I'm just going to be writing about mistakes that people make in the beginning, because these are mistakes that even I made at the beginning, because I was starting out at 16 years old, 17 years old, and I had muscle and fitness, and I had things like the abs diet, which great reading material. But I'm going to be talking about that for at least a couple articles in my series. Tony, what are you thinking about talking about in your articles?
I'm probably mainly going to be dealing with strength. If someone's goal is strength, dealing more with that, like stuff they can do to get stronger. I'll also be dealing with a lot of program design and personal training. Mistakes, advice, what have you. It should be interesting. So, I've never run out of material to write about. So
that's good. And I know, Jimmy, you talked about possibly writing about physique-related stuff in general.
Yeah, I'm going to kind of just write a little bit about everything. I'm going to have some corrective exercise stuff. I'm going to have some physique stuff. I'm going to have some strength stuff, some performance stuff, nutrition, a little bit of everything. So why don't But Kev, when you go around and ask everybody what they're doing and what doing wasn't, everybody kind of talk a little bit about what they're doing this week, so everybody kind of knows what's going on, what's going to come up on the website.
You know what? Another great idea from Jimmy Smith, who, by the way, had the idea for us to have articles on the website daily and also to redesign the show. So by all means, Jimmy, we got to put your name on that T-shirt, you know?
Hey, I'm with it. I'm moving more to producing. I'm making the beats, so that's all that matters.
Wow.
Oh, it was a joke. I mean,
straight out of Connecticut.
By the way, can I say I loved how the show ended last week with Marky Mark's Good Vibrations? Like, I had listened to that part over and over again.
Oh, I missed it. I didn't even listen to it.
Oh, no, you just ruined it for Tony and the people that haven't listened to last week's show.
But it was still funny nonetheless.
Let's just hope we don't get sued, you know?
You can actually call me Diddy as my middle name. You can say Jimmy Diddy Smith, but...
No.
No.
Sorry. Suggestion.
All right. Well, let's jump back to Tony. Tony, what are you writing about this week?
This week I'm writing about basically if you're a guy and you can't do at least 5 pull-ups, you should not be doing a whole day of arm curls. So I basically go into saying that you don't have big arms because you're weaker than a baby's fart. So I'm talking about doing basically more banded pull-ups and just talking about simple ways you can have more pull-ups in your routine. So that's my little diatribe.
That sounds baby's part, so, Tony.
I used that. Actually, it was funny. I used that. I was at work the other day, and we have a bunch of new trainers that just started this week, and we also had a new nutritionist, and I happened to be up at the front desk, and the nutritionist, who's probably upper 20s, I mean, pretty, you know, attractive girl, but not that had to do with anything, but she made notice of this guy training. He was at the pulley machine. He's probably my height. I'm 6'1", but easily probably weighed maybe 160 pounds. And she's like, oh, that guy's pretty ripped. You can see every striation in his muscles. And I was like, yeah, but he's probably weaker than a baby's fart. And the trainers and her started laughing. She's like, oh my God, I've never heard that before. I'm like, you know, but it's true.
It's good to have fresh material sometimes.
You know. Tony.
Yes.
Can you just send her to my website, jimmysmithtraining.com?
Well, it's funny. She said one of the trainers started asking her, oh, you know, what do you do? What are your specialties? She's like, oh, I deal with sports nutrition and da-da-da. And I said, oh, you read a lot of Berardi stuff or Lonnie Lowry or Lyle McDonald? Never heard of them. So I'm like, yeah, you don't deal with sports nutrition. So, not that they're the end-all be-all of sports nutrition, but, you know, I would think that, you know, she would have heard of one of those. She never heard of Jimmy Smith either.
Damn it.
Wow. She's off the list. She's out of the club.
Yeah. Honestly, I mean...
She's not going to be... I'm not going to bring her on the FitCast.
So, is that one way of picking up women now, is to say, hey, you want to come on the FitCast? I haven't asked that yet, but...
Hey, no, if that's what you guys were thinking, I'm out of here. No, I'm just kidding.
Wow. Oh. Well, this is starting off well. Let's jump to you, Keith. What are you going to be writing about in general, and also what are you writing about for this week?
Well, overall, I mean, I like to write about a little bit of everything, a lot of experiences that I have at work.
Well, I'm pumped that
like
you're
that.
Going to be talking a little bit about, we're going to be able to tap into your corrective mindset, which we haven't really talked about on the show. Thanks, Jimmy helped me realize this. We haven't talked about corrective exercises ever, except when
wait, excuse me, that was my habit.
Oh, okay, whatever.
No, I'm excited to talk about, I mean, that's my background, that's where my experience is. I mean, I'm going to try to write about everything. This first mini article is going to be more just about the hips and the shoulders, actually. And, you know, those are the two areas that I feel are the most important things to take care of, no matter who you are, and then everything else kind of falls into place. As far as corrective and preventative or injury reduction goes, no matter what you do. So I'm going to talk a little about the hips, a little bit about the shoulders, and just general things to kind of get you on the right path to health that way.
Oh, very good. We look forward to checking that out, and your article is going to be coming out on Tuesday. So
Tuesday, yeah.
Again, everyone's going to have a reason to check back at the site every single day, which is really cool. We're going to have some great content for you. And last but not least, Jen Heath in the van, in the parking lot. Tell us what you're going to be writing about.
This week, I just did a little mini article about mindset and kind of getting your mindset changed on body composition. You know, it mostly applies to women, I think, because we tend to focus on it more, but it applies to men too. I mean, doing anything too slow or too fast is never good. Steady and strong is always the best, and I think a lot of women are way overly concerned with the scale. We hear this over and over and over again, but I think I have a unique perspective on it. I train about 50 women across. Well, I've got them all over the world. I've got them in Australia, Canada, all over the States, you know. Just getting used to the fact that sometimes weight isn't a bad thing, and learning that being muscular and strong sometimes doesn't equate to the scale. So, but in general, in the future, I'll be writing about a lot of nutritional stuff. Of course, some training things, why women who want nice asses need to be squatting. Didn't we talk about that once?
We did. It got a lot of attention,
I'll be writing about a little
too.
I'll be writing a little bit about everything.
Very good. We look forward to checking all that stuff out. And Jen's articles will be finishing off the week on Friday. So make sure to check that out again.
That's because we always save the best for last.
That we do. Wow. And that's what we're doing on the show now. Everyone gets a little bit because we save Jimmy Smith for the end of the show when we sign off too. So everyone gets a little bit, you know. All right. Well, anyways, let's talk about the new show format. I know we have a lot of little things to take care of before we jump into the interview with Mike Boyle, by the way. Did I mention that? I didn't.
No.
Well, Mike Boyle's interview is coming up in the show. But for the new format of the show, we're more or less going to be cutting out the news. We're still going to be talking about probably articles that, like, say, come up on T-Nation that we feel like we want to discuss. It's worthy of being talked about a little bit more. Also, if there's something in the news, like, really appealing to us, again, we're just not going to be doing 4 or 5 news stories a week like we used to do. We're going to be sticking more towards 1, maybe 2 articles per week, and we're going to be filling up the rest of that time with more in-depth training discussion, nutrition discussion, and like we just mentioned, corrective discussion. So we're going to be giving you a lot more applicable information, I'd say, besides just knowing that people are stealing meat from supermarkets because it's so expensive now. That was a story, by the way.
Yes, it was.
And that reminds me, we ended last week's show with the Marky Mark song, and for the stolen meat show, we ended it with Caught Stealing by
Jane's Addiction.
Which has been played on the radio like 8 times within the last 2 weeks. But that's
interesting.
Yeah, it is. A little bit of fun facts. Do you guys want to talk about movies before we get going? Or?
Yeah, I saw Knocked Up yesterday. I did not like it at all. It was long. It wasn't funny.
That was
not
a joke, Jimmy.
But... my bad.
All right. Well, now we know that too. Let's also talk about the Mike Boyle interview that's going to be coming up. I took a ton of listener questions, and Mike Boyle, you know, believe it or not, just like Jen, he did the interview in his car on the phone because his house was so noisy. So you're going to get to hear from Mike Boyle in a little bit. Next up, I'm doing a huge promotion at the FitCast Insider store for the next week right now. We're going to be offering 25% off all purchases of $25 or more. So you could pick up like 4 interviews, and you can pick up the Dan Jones squat video in high quality, and you'll get 25% off. A bunch of people have already taken advantage of this because I started it, I think, on Friday. But all discounts are going to be processed at checkout, so you don't have to worry about entering codes or all that stuff. And again, it's at the FitCast store, which is just at thefitcastinsider.com/store. And I might just pick up another link so you can just go to thefitcaststore.com, something like that. And you know what? Actually, you know, I'm feeling kind of crazy. If you want to also, if you sign up for the quarterly subscription at the FitCast Insider right now, I'll throw in a free t-shirt. You know, it's $30 for 3 months, but I'll throw in a free FitCast t-shirt, which, like we mentioned in the past, some of our co-hosts even use them to pick up significant others.
Who are you talking about?
I think you know who I'm talking about.
Bastard.
All right, last but not least, before we get into the interview, sorry, last thing. Starting next week, we're going to be doing some big specials with Black Star Labs, not just the 10% off, which you can get with Fit10 at checkout at blackstarlabs.com, but we're going to be doing some bigger giveaways where we're going to be having a secret word of the week that I'm going to mention somewhere in the show. It's not going to be in any one place, but you'll know it when I say it. And at checkout, when you enter that code in the comments, you're going to get some free products. So it's going to work out really well. Black Star Labs is being super generous with helping us start this promotion. And again, anytime you want to go and like pick up Cytofuse or pick up their like awesome whey protein at Black Star Labs, always enter the code FIT10, FIT1010, and you can get 10% off right away. Well, that's it for me. I don't want to talk anymore. Let's jump into the Mike Boyle interview, and we're going to come right back after that with a roundtable discussion on hip mobility, the problems, the cures, and all that good stuff. So we'll see you in about 25 minutes. Hello, with me today is Mike Boyle. He is a renowned strength and conditioning coach. He founded Mike Boyle Strength and Conditioning, served as the Boston Bruins strength and conditioning coach from 91 to 99. He has been working as a strength and conditioning coach for BU for over 15 years and now acts as the assistant strength and conditioning coach for them. Mike was also the strength and conditioning coach for the 1998 U.S. Women's Olympic Ice Hockey Team, who were the gold medalists, in Nagano, and served as a consultant in the development of the USA Hockey National Team Development Program in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Currently, he is a featured speaker who has been seen at various seminars, including the Perform Better seminars that I've attended in the past, and continues to write for various websites, including TNation.com, which a lot of our listeners check out. So, Mike, first off, I want to welcome you to the show.
Well, thank you very much for having me. This is something that it's been on my list of things to do for a while, so I'm glad that I'm able to get out and do it.
Yeah, like I said, it's a huge pleasure to have you on the show. And without further ado, let's just jump right into the questions. We got a good lineup of questions for you. First off, James, who is a goalie, would like to ask, what do you do in regards to strength training and especially flexibility and mobility training for the goaltenders at BU? He says that he is a goalie himself, and it's hard to get good quality off-ice training feedback.
Yeah, it's interesting. It was funny when I looked at the list of questions and I said I'm going to have some unconventional answers, in the sense we don't do much different for our goalies. Mm-hmm. When I first started working with ice hockey players, and now we're probably about 20 years into it, one of the things that we realized was that goalies wanted very much to be different. And as a result, different meant that they didn't lift weights, they didn't do speed work, they didn't do plyos. Basically, they didn't work out at all. They just stopped hockey puck. And so part of our philosophy was to make our goalie part of the team. Mm-hmm. And so as a result, I have always shied away from any specific goalie training, because I've always felt like in the past it was always sort of a way for them to kind of differentiate themselves from the team and to kind of break out of the team mold. We've gone the exact opposite way. And our feeling is that the goalie position, by its nature, is the most explosive, the quickest, the most powerful guy on your team. And very rarely is the goalie that guy. Mm-hmm. It's unusual. At BU, we've had a very, very good run of really athletic goalies who, over time, have become that guy. But in the beginning, most of them come in with this idea of just that, you know, I need to be flexible, I need to be mobile, I need to be able to do a split. When in reality, it's sort of the, you know, you hate to sound cliched, but it's the cat-like reflexes that make these guys great, not the ability to, you know, not the fact that they're like a ballerina and can do a split. Some of these guys really aren't all that flexible. Rick DiPietro, who was, you know, the first overall pick in the draft, was a flat-out athlete. He could clean 270 pounds. He could bench 270 pounds. He was a stud physically. And he was, you know, he's one of the best goaltenders in the NHL, and he was one of the best goaltenders in college hockey the one year he was with us. So we've really shy away from specific training and as far as flexibility, mobility, strength goes anyway. But in that position, I always have particularly done it because I think the team dynamic is much more important than the needs of one individual guy. Is that a long answer to a short question?
Oh, no, that was great. Hopefully that will clear up a lot of things for James. The next question comes from our good friend Carl Valley, who had to get his question in for the show too. And that is, what is your training inventory with combine athletes in regards to plyometric exercises? Could you outline a progression in both teaching and training and how they interact with the two jump tests and the 40 and the 5-10-5?
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, one of the things that we've seen, obviously explosive power correlates reasonably well to linear speed. But again, and it, you're going to think, well, he's giving the same answer to the same questions over and over again. But what we found, again, with most of these high-level combine athletes is they just haven't done enough of the basics. It's very interesting how often you'll meet someone who says, I really want to get fast. And then when you ask them to outline what they've been doing to try to get fast, they're probably not doing any of the things that they're supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. In the sense, they're not a good squatter, they're not a good Olympic lifter, they're not on a plyometric program. So our plyo progression, if you look in functional training for sports, it's the one that's right in there. We start out with box jumps, because the nice thing is none of the jumps in the combine are reactive jumps, in the sense that you've got a standing long jump and you've got a vertical jump, neither of which are essentially plyometric activities because they're not reactive.
Mm-hmm.
So as a result, from a training standpoint, you don't need a ton of plyometric training. The plyometric training probably is more important as it relates to 5-10-5 or to the 40 in terms of developing that power. But most of the time with a combine guy, I don't have enough time to bring him through the progression rapidly enough. So occasionally with a combine guy, we might skip a step, which is something that we try to never do. But I try to get 3 weeks of jumping up, you know, 3 weeks of box jumps, 3 weeks of things like that. The same type of progressions that we've always used in terms of, you know, we always have a linear double leg, we always have a linear single leg, we always have a lateral bound, you know, right to left kind of exercise, and we always have a lateral hop in terms of, you know, right foot or left foot to left foot. And that remains relatively consistent with our athletes. The other thing you have to think about with combine guys, they're usually coming right out of the season. So as a result, from a preparation level, they're sort of at an all-time low. You know, they're not where they would be at the end of the summer. They're not in a situation where they can, you know, really jump into a lot of elastic, reactive type of activity. So we really try to minimize it.
And just for everyone out there, if you haven't picked up Functional Training for Sports, it's something you can get on Amazon for under $15 now. It's something that everyone should have in their library, whether you're a trainer or whether you're just like the weekend warrior. You can just learn so much from that manual. Well, let's jump into the next question that comes from Ray. His son is 13 years old and plays hockey and baseball. He wants to start going to the gym with me this summer to get ready for freshman hockey. Can you give Ray some basic set and rep advice along with number of exercises and days per week? Also, he has not reached or gone through puberty. He says that also that he will be playing baseball 1 to 2 times per week, playing 1 day per week of summer hockey, power skating 1 day per week. And again, he just wants to know, wants to train, but he wants to know how much is right.
I mean, I think probably for that kid at 13 years of age, 2 day total body. And I think one of the things that you've seen in my presentation, so we talk about that quote, you know, in the beginner's mind, there are many choices. In the expert's mind, there are few.
Mm-hmm.
And I think just about everybody that you ask would probably say for that kid, 2 days a week, total body, stick to the basics, you know, push-ups, some sort of chin-up progression in the sense of probably, I like bands, I like to use super bands, I like to get them pulling and being able to, you know, to be able to work on chin-ups, some sort of rowing progression, some sort of squatting progression, you know, basically we start teaching those kids the front squat, and some sort of deadlifting progression. I think for most people, again, we get back to the same sort of stumbling block over and over again in terms of everybody wants it to be fancy, everybody wants it to be cute, but, you know, you're working over at Excel with Carl and Eric and those guys. You know, basics are basics.
Yeah.
And you've got to get, you know, you got to teach a kid to do a bench press, to do a push-up, to do a row, to do a pull-up, to do a squat, to do a deadlift, and get them really proficient. At that age, our concept of training is proficiency-based.
Mm-hmm.
What I want a kid at 12 or 13 or 14 years old to learn how to do is how to do the lifts. I don't even care if they get stronger. In all reality, they'll get stronger. You know, stronger is almost osmotic by being involved in the process. You know, if you lifted weights for the entire 10 or 12 weeks of the summer, you'd clearly get stronger. You'd have no problem increasing your strength. But the difference is you know, should that be the emphasis? No, I don't think there should be any, you know, weight emphasis, any sort of one rep emphasis, any of those things. Yet the acquisition of these basic skills is essential. The ability, because as you get older, you need that first building block of training, which is technical proficiency. You've got to get this, you know, this young boy, you know, people worry about prepubescent. I can give you my puberty rant too. You know, when you think about, you know, again, I'm not a big fan of the medical profession as it relates to how they've helped us in our field, because when we look at the medical profession, what we realize is they tell us things like you shouldn't lift weights before puberty, but you can do figure skating and gymnastics.
Mm-hmm.
That's an absolutely moronic thought process. Figure skating and gymnastics are like organized child abuse in terms of the way they destroy a young kid's body.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the gravitational forces, the joint forces, all of the things that these kids encounter. Yet the concept of putting a bar on somebody's back or on their shoulders and squatting is suddenly, you know, something that's dangerous and will damage their growth plates. And it's, you know, you just think, I always say, think of the logic of that. Bring a physicist in or a biomechanist or anybody who knows anything about anything and say, you know, what do you think is more dangerous? Do you think that this process of squatting, you know, basically holding a bar and going, you know, doing knee bends up and down, or, you know, a double backflip pike landing, you know, which one produces more force around the joint, around the growth plate?
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
Anybody with, you know, 1 ounce of education would be like, well, God, figure skating gymnastics, you know, you're probably looking at 10 times the joint load that you'd be looking at, you know, with a squat with a 45-pound bar. And yet, we have consistent emphasis from the medical community that we should not be weightlifting. And yet, these sports, I would say, they let us do them because they're cute. You know, it's like, oh, you can kill those kids, don't worry about it. It's cute in the Olympics. You know, it's idiotic, the logic that we get stuck with in this field and the way things are presented.
No, it's something that might even has hit home for some people in Massachusetts. I just saw on the nightly news 2 nights ago just stories about, I mean, us in the fitness world have heard about kids at 13, 14 years old getting Tommy John surgery and things like that, and also girls that are doing gymnastics having stress fractures at 10, 11, 12 years old. It boggles the mind.
It is absolutely absurd, but it all goes back to this idea, you know, this early specialization idea, this concept that
mm-hmm.
if we start earlier, you know, I always say for every Tiger Woods, there's 5,000 kids that hate their father, you know, and nobody thinks about it that way. No one looks at it and says, gee, you know, am I childhood stealing? Am I childhood ruining? Am I doing something wrong here? If they think, oh, I'm giving my kid the advantage. You know, I'm giving him the edge. There is no edge. When you look at it, the great athletes of our generation were not single sport athletes. Maybe in sports that require that, like golf or figure skating or gymnastics, they are, because particularly figure skating and gymnastics, it's weight determined and size determined, and maturation is an issue that makes you not good at it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But in most of the other sports, in any of your team sports, football, baseball, basketball, ice hockey, early specialization is actually a detriment. You end up, we see this all the time. The reason American hockey is suffering right now is because you've got all these kids who specialize when they're young. They just play hockey. And so we don't have any athletes. You know, the athletes are not there. And as a result, the elite level players aren't there because you need a guy with tremendous athletic ability or a girl.
Mike, if you have someone that, like you said, is specializing in hockey year-round, how much of a break do you think they should take from that sport during the year?
I mean, in reality, I don't think a kid, if they specialize before 14, it's a huge error.
Mm-hmm.
And it probably, you know, I said it might produce a good Division II hockey player, but it probably won't produce a good Division I hockey player. Unless the kid's got great genetics to begin with. You know, if he's the son of an ex-NHL player, maybe it wouldn't have made any difference. But I think a lot of times we look at the outcome and think that, this is the way it's supposed to be, when that outcome might not have changed. So I think, in all reality, I'd love to see the kids take, you know, 3 to 6 months off the sport. One of the things that you realize now is we're stuck with entrepreneurs who make their living by selling sport year-round, whether it's hockey, whether it's soccer, whether it's AAU basketball, whether it's AAU baseball. If you have these baseball coaches, you know, we don't have teacher coaches anymore. We don't have people who work at the high school and coach two or three sports. We have entrepreneurs who make a living year-round in their sport. Part of making a living year-round in their sport is selling this concept that they need the sport year-round. Mm-hmm. It's strictly an economic driver for the person who's selling it. It has nothing to do with what benefits the kid, because if any of these quote-unquote gurus looked at the evidence, they would know that the evidence doesn't support their premise at all. I would say that Nomar Garciaparra played soccer, kicked in the football team, and played baseball. He was trying to do all three of those at Georgia Tech. You know, and this is a guy, you know, one of the greatest athletes in baseball. Mia Hamm, I remember seeing a picture of Mia at 11 years old with a football uniform on in her book. Christine Lilly, probably the second greatest female soccer player in history, captained the soccer team, the basketball team, and the softball team at Wilton High School in Wilton, Connecticut. You could go down the list forever, and you'll very rarely find one of these great achievers who specialized. But specialization has become a phenomenon. You know, again, people say, that's all the Brazilians do. It's all the Brazilians have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, doesn't necessarily make it right. It just means that's what they do. So when we're looking at these things, you know, we have to look kind of at cause and effect, and does cause and effect really make sense in this sense?
Oh, good points.
I don't think it does.
Yeah. The next question comes from Ryan. This is in regards to actually a presentation that I saw at your facility a couple months back. He asks, how is the transfer to a less intense CNS program going? I don't know if it's been long enough into the summer yet for you to really...
Yeah, no, it's been long enough. It's been long enough to the point that, if you can imagine, my BU athletes were hitting PRs in the fourth week.
Really?
Of the offseason. Yeah, it's gone almost absurdly when I look at it, and I think probably by the end of the summer I'll feel pretty stupid, because almost every day I have somebody who lifts more weight than they've ever lifted before.
That's amazing.
It's been pretty consistent, yeah. It really is. It's amazing in the sense that it took me this long to figure it out.
The next question, again, comes from Ryan. Do you think doing plyometric work at the beginning of a workout makes it harder to gain strength by lowering energy levels for the strength-building portion of the workout?
No, because I think if you look at the volume of jumps that we do, I think they probably fall closer to the warm-up category than they do to, you know, to something that's going to take away from the quality of the workout. So it's, no, I don't think that's a problem at all. I think some people think of plyometric work by nature is like sprint work. It should be very, very low volume, very, very long rest periods in between, and it shouldn't really be taxing at all. The other question that you run into is, if you don't do it, then when do you do it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you're in a situation, we always say it's a speed continuum. So we're basically going to work, you know, plyometrics first, Olympic lift second, and then strength lifts third. Because the thing I'd be more worried about is, can you do plyometric work after you've gone and worked on your strength exercises? So I think it's more when you turn the question around, does it make sense?
Could you just give an example of the amount of like repetitions or the total amount of sets that you used in a general plyometrics before you're training for your athletes?
For us, it tends to be very, very much around the 25 jumps a day.
Okay.
You know, so, you know, it might be five sets of five box jumps. It might be three sets of five single leg hops on each leg, you know, which would give us a total volume of 30 with a volume of 15 each leg. The volume, my concept of plyometrics is one in which volume stays relatively constant and the intensity goes up continually over the summer.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense that we jump up or we hop up and we land and we stabilize. So we're not getting a lot of, you know, basically we're adding in more and more gravity and more reactivity as we go through the summer, but we're not adding volume in terms of a number of jumps or amount of jumps.
Very good. We have a surprise question that comes from Tony Gentilcore, and he wanted me to ask you about Jennifer Gardner because she was just here the past weekend, he tells me. But I'm not going to do that.
Tell Tony actually that she was asking about him, and I I said that he had a girlfriend and that she wasn't interested, so Tony's out of luck. No. She actually, I know she was in Boston, I guess, for at the Red Sox game, but I will just say that she was a wonderful person to work with. She is absolutely as nice. You can't imagine somebody being that nice. You say to her all the time, like, you got to be faking this. You cannot really be like this. She would come in and train with our hockey players, come in the morning, you know, with her hair in a ponytail. Hi, everybody. How you doing? How's your day? How's your class? It was like, wow. She's sweet, and Tony will be forever jealous, but one of the perks of being around for 20 years.
Tony wanted to ask you, for the listeners that have never read it, can you briefly explain your rationale on your article, Should Women Run? I think he has the title wrong, but it was about the concept of should women be running.
I think Should Women Run was actually supposed to be the title, and I forget what it came out. Sometimes that one I wrote for Core Performance, and sometimes the editor, Mark Onigman, sometimes he retitles that for something that might be a little catchier, but it basically, the premise was sort of to ask a rhetorical question. Should women run? Biomechanically, based on the way female skeletons are designed, is running necessarily a good choice? My feeling is no. When we look at, I think, and it's funny, if you saw my last newsletter, I can't think of Shane's last name right now, but from Kingston, Ontario, wrote another one, Should Anybody Run? I mean, when we look at this, you know, should anybody do aerobic work? Should anybody run long distance? My feeling, if someone asks me, if I'm a personal trainer or I'm advising personal trainers, I'm not recommending running. I'm not recommending repetitive foot striking as a good training technique. I would much rather see people infiltrate. I'd much rather see people do tempo run where they run walk than do continuous aerobic activity. And that is just, the answer is more extreme for females just because of the way their bodies are built. I mean, when you think about things like Q angle, you know, basically the ratio of hip width to knee width, have people who are at a biomechanical disadvantage. The wider, you know, the more, I hate to use this term because I always get in trouble, but the more womanly your figure, you know, the more curvy you are, the worse running is for you. The more of a disadvantage you're at in terms of your biomechanics, and the more likely you are to be hurt, the more likely you are to have, you know, an IT band problem or, you know, plantar fascia problem or an SI joint problem because you don't distribute force well off the ground.
Lastly, before we let you go today, I got a couple people that asked pretty much this general question, but they wanted to know, do you have any projects that you're working on right now, like any book projects? I know the DVD from the seminar that I attended on the less CNS intensive training is now out, but is there anything else that you're working on right now?
I really don't have anything. You know, I have a bunch of stuff that I'm working on in terms of I'm always writing articles. I have a couple of books, you know. I'm working on some chapters for where there's a book. There's supposed to be a Hockey Training by the Experts book that I'm writing a chapter for. I'm writing a chapter for a book that Jay Shiner and Don Chu are editing on, just a general sports training book that I'm going to write the hockey chapter on. And, you know, I'm working, I would like to write a fitness book, you know, so I have probably half of a fitness book written, but I'm trying to figure out sort of, you know, publishers and things like that. So, you know, I always have 5 or 6 or 7 projects going, probably none of them that fall kind of in the category of like functional strength coach or any of these DVD packages that we've done. I think I'll probably, you know, next year I may venture back into that. Alan Cosgrove and I were talking about filming our talks at the Perform Better. I did an infill training talk that Alan saw and then Alan Aragon, some other guys saw that thought, and they were like, this, you really should do what you did with the CNS intensive one and video it and sell it because it's worthy of that. And I didn't actually think so at first, but I had enough people ask me where I think at the Rhode Island Perform Better, I actually may videotape that one and then get it out. Because what you realize that, as you know, I mean, you're in the information business. People are really hungry for information. They want to get this stuff, you know, and if you can put it out there in a, you know, a readily available format like you're doing, you know, people will buy it. And for me, I mean, I'm not all about selling stuff and making money. I'm more about trying to get good quality information out there, but it doesn't hurt to be able to feed the family either.
That's a great point. I think all of our listeners out there are the same way. They're just, they show up every week just trying to get little tidbits of information, whatever they can pick up. And again, it's great. And lastly, final question before we do go, where can people go to just get some more information on you or just check out some of your products?
Well, I think if you look, you know, michaelboyle.biz, which actually it's funny, we've developed a huge following with, you know, promotion is based on stuff like this. You know, we don't do any, you know, I don't do any search engine optimization. I don't do any, I got to learn all the web stuff that I'm supposed to be doing. Yet, I have a higher Alexa than a bunch of people I know put a lot of time and energy into actually doing it. So it's a really good site. It has really good form. It has the products on it. We've got my second book on there as an e-book. And I was talking to Martin Rooney the other day, and he said, you got to change the title of that book. He said, more people should read that book, but I don't think anybody ever, you know, somebody, it's called Designing Strength Training Programs and Facilities. And you know, the facility part is about the first chapter, but I thought it's a really important chapter, and that was sort of the thrust, you know, how to design a facility, how to design a program. But he was saying to me that it probably underrepresents the book, which was coming from him complimentary. And then the DVD packages are on there. You know, we have the CNS intensive one on there. We have functional strength coach. So all of the products are in the product section. It might take people a couple of clicks to get to them. But, you know, if you go there, if you go to products, you click on products and you look through, you can find most of that stuff.
Very good. Well, once again, Mike, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show and answering some of our listener questions. And hopefully a lot of the FitCast listeners out there are going to get to see you in Rhode Island. Hopefully they're going to see you at some Perform Better seminar. I mean, it seems like they're all over the place now, which is so fantastic.
Yeah. Well, the summit is really the one. I mean, they still have 3 weeks to sign up. And I'll be honest with you, I've gone to the last two both to speak, but as an attendee. And it's going to take me 3 summits to see all the presentations that I wanted to see myself.
Oh, yeah.
Because of the number of good people that they have and the number of good quality presentations going on. I mean, Chris Poirier has done an unbelievable job of, you know, you sit there sometimes and you have to choose between 3 really good presenters. You're sitting there and saying, you know, should I listen to Greg Coach? Should I listen to Martin Rooney? Should I listen to Todd Wright? You know, and you got to make decisions. And the good part about going 3 times is eventually I want to get to hear them all.
That works. That works pretty well. Hopefully, if we have any 3-timers out there that got to all the Perform Better summits, that would be quite an achievement. So feel free to let me know about that, and maybe I'll send you a free T-shirt or something like that. But again, Mike, thanks for coming on the show. We're going to let you go right now, and we're going to be jumping back into the main show right now. So thanks again, Mike, and we will talk to you later. All right, well, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Mike Boyle, but we still have more to talk about. First, before we jump into the roundtable, just quickly, have to mention our sponsors. First off, Craig Ballantyne and TurbulenceTraining.com. Boost muscle growth and blowtorch body fat with TurbulenceTraining.com. You can also purchase Turbulence Training through the fitcast.com if you want to do it that way as well. There's a picture on the right-hand side where you can get all that Turbulence Training goodness, especially in summer's here. I mean, it's can't be all show, no go. Or is it all go, no show?
Well, it depends what you're saying, the context that you're saying it in.
Oh, then I usually
If it's an athlete, they want to be all go, no show. If it's all show, no go.
Yeah, no, I'm thinking of like the guys that, like, you know, those guys in high school that are all like macho dudes, and
all show, no go.
Okay.
But when you're on the beach, that's what you want to be.
Okay, sure. Jimmy's our resident expert for beach going. As he had to miss this week's beach extravaganza to do the show.
I used to lifeguard on the beach years ago, Kev, so I got some insight.
I would have been David Hasselhoff like hell on that beach, let me tell you.
Yep, I did that for 4 years.
Did you ever have to rescue anyone?
Yeah, all the time.
All the time?
No, I mean, it was on the ocean. It was on the ocean. I mean, there were saves almost every day.
Wow. That's like a dangerous beach, huh?
Well, it's
you're
just,
a I'm, hero.
No. I mean, it's normal. I mean, if you spend any time on the beach, you're going to see that. I mean, no,
we have music playing in the background right now. For
you. We need the Baywatch thing right now.
What's up?
We need the Baywatch theme right now.
Dude, I got it. It's already playing in the background. You don't know what you're
talking about. You have Jen Heath on the
Hey, we lost Tony.
Oh, we did. Yeah, sorry. I didn't notice that. Well, anyways, I'm going to keep talking about our sponsors as Tony comes back. And the best part about Tony is he tries to call me back when he knows I have to add him to the conference.
It's a natural reaction.
It is. But anyways, next up, Blackstar Labs. Check them out at blackstarlabs.com. Again, don't forget to enter the coupon code FIT10 at the checkout. That discount will be processed when your order is processed. So if it doesn't show up right away, don't worry. You will be getting that 10% off. And like I said, I back Blackstar Labs stuff 110%. I don't use really anything else right now. It's just Cytofuse, their Casein Pro, and their Whey Supremacy, I think it's called. All good stuff. And also they have a really good pharmaceutical fish oil that if you're a part of the FitCast Insider, you're going to hear Carl Valley talk about in about a week. Lastly, but not leastly, is Mike Robertson and at robertsontrainingsystems.com, high octane corrective exercise and performance enhancement at robertsontrainingsystems.com. That's where you can pick up your magnificent mobility. You can pick up Inside Out, the Bulletproof Knee Manual. I mean, Mike's got it all there. So much great information. Also, make sure to check out his blog. Tons of good stuff there. Well, anyways, that we have the sponsors all taken care of, let's jump into our roundtable discussion, which I'm going to let Keith pretty much take it over. Keith, do you want to just jump into the discussion talking about hip mobility?
Yeah, and before I do, as we're going through here, I mean, by all means, people jump in if you have something to say, because, I mean, that's what a roundtable is all about. And, you know, we all have plenty of really good things to probably add to this discussion, so feel free to jump in, interrupt, those types of things. Hip mobility, I think you guys will all agree, I think it's one of the most important things, as far as preventative, corrective exercise type of things, even somebody that comes off of an injury. I believe that most knee injuries come from poor hips. A lot of lower back injuries, or type of problems come because of poor hips. So it's a big area that I always address with my athletes or my regular clients. So with that said, you know, I'm going to talk a little bit about the assessment process, and I don't want to make this too complex, because without pictures and things like that, it's sometimes kind of hard. But is there everybody there?
I'm here.
Okay. We lost Tony Gentilcore, but I'm working to get him back. Don't worry about it.
Okay. For the assessment, I do two types of assessment, and one of the things I'll say before I get into it is, a lot of the times, to simplify things, the same things that you use for an exercise to increase hip mobility are the same ways you can assess hip mobility. So you don't have to go into two separate type of things. I'll give you an example. Sometimes I'll use like a lunge, and I'll have the athlete or the client do a lunge and then just slowly rotate their upper body, just to see. That's a way we can stretch hip flexors. We can stretch different different musculature in the hip. That's the same way you can use to assess the hip. So without getting into specifics, just understand that if you know how to actively mobilize a hip or increase mobility in a hip, you can also test the hip in the same way. Since, excuse me, I like to do a flat out what I call a passive assessment, athlete client on the table, bring them through a passive range of motion, pretty simple. You know, I'll do hip flexion, I'll do hip extension, internal external rotation, abduction, adduction, basically taking the hip passively through all ranges of motion, comparing to both sides, finding an end point. Are we there?
No, I was just seeing if Tony Gentilcore's on. I didn't know it would be that loud. I told him to cough, but not that loud. Sorry.
Okay. But finding like kind of an end point, and all that end point is, for people who don't understand it, is right when you feel the tissue starting to tighten up. And once you if you know your norms, and norms are different in every book you read, but if you know the basic norms of mobility, you can kind of compare where you are in that assessment. And once you get a baseline for a passive assessment, I like to bring the person through an active assessment. I'll do an overhead squat. I'll do some hurdle drills. I like to call them. I'll set up some low-level hurdles and have the person walk over the hurdles, and they have to bring the leg I'm testing over each hurdle. And I kind of watch their upper body to see where it goes along with the hip, because if you have hip problems, your upper body is going to tell the tale. It's, you know, for example, tight hip flexors, you're going to bend at the spine more to compensate for the fact that you can't move your hip flexors. Same with the hamstrings. Sometimes you'll get a lumbar extension to compensate for tight hamstrings and certain things that you do. So I'll do all kinds of hurdle drills, active hurdle drills. I'll also have them do a lunge, both static and dynamic, with their hands over their head, again, trying to watch for, you know, hip flexion, trying to watch for lumbar extension or flexion and those types of things. But those are real general, quick assessments. I mean, I can get in specifics as we open up the conversation, but, you know, I'd like to have somebody else kind of chime in here and kind of either piggyback or take, you know, talk about what they do as well.
Jimmy Smith.
Yeah, well, just talking quickly about assessments. I do a lot of the same stuff Keith does. Initially, I like to first put the person on the table. Like, I like to touch people. I think you have to when you work in this field. Get your mind out of the gutter. I think you
have
to.
That wasn't me, by the way. It wasn't the 21-year-old.
Oh, okay, whatever. But I think you have to touch people when you're in this field, especially when you're working with injured people. So I'll put them on the table. I'll just poke around. I'll poke around their adductors. I'll do a straight leg raise. I'll do a hip extension test. Put them on their stomach. Make them extend from their hip. That's usually where you see a lot of the patterns that are going on with the pelvis. You see a ton of rotation. See a lot of knee flexion. You even see like the opposite trapple fire. You see like the opposite QL. That kind of lets you know where to look. So initially, I'll put them on the table. I'll poke around. I'll find some things. Generally, what you're going to find is you can find their external rotators, their piriformis. That area is locked up. The six external rotators are going to be all locked up. You're going to find their TFL is going to be jacked up. Their QL is going to have, excuse me, you're going to find like golf balls in people's QLs. And then for a more active test, what I'll do is, I'll make the person squat. So either their arms out in front of them or their arms out on their hips. And then you're going to assess a couple things. Are their ankles rolling in? So what's going on with their overpronation? Because, again, keep in mind, you can't just look at the site of pain. So even though we're talking about the hip here, you have to look at every other area on their body. You're going to look at their genu valgus, so their reduction of their knee, of their tibia. Then you're going to go and you're going to look when they get low in a squat, because you should be able to get low in a squat. If you can't, then there's an issue. So if they're getting low in the squat, what's their position like when they get deep? Then I'll make them put their arms overhead, like an overhead squat. And then you generally see a couple different patterns. See the person going a little further forward with their body, with their upper body, that they wouldn't in the normal squat. And then I'm going to have them lunge, very much like he said. I'm going to have them throw out their front, throw out a foot, have them lunge. If the knee comes in, what happens when I put my hand there? Does it still come in? And then this is a really cool tip for people. The way to correct dysfunction is with resistance, right? So I'll have someone lunge out and I'll have them like punch through to the other side. And obviously this is just through an assessment, but that generally corrects everything that's going on in terms of their knee and their foot traveling the midline, under their center of gravity. And then I just watch people walk, make them walk up and down a hall, and I see what's going on there. So those are the assessment things. I'll get into a little bit about the hip later, but just want someone else to jump in here, Jen or Keith, and just talk about what you guys see with hip mobility, or Tony, if he's back on.
Well, actually, I have a quick question, Jimmy.
Yes.
When you say you're assessing someone to see how deep they can get in a squat, like what is your criteria for what deep is? Because I know I have criteria. I just want to know what yours is.
Generally, I like to see how deep can they get without pain. Like if they can sit low and they're fine and they're not, they don't have what's called the sacrum counternotation. So it's when the sacrum rolls out. If they don't have, if they can get low enough, that's going to happen with everybody no matter what you get. But some people happens like as soon as they go into knee flexion, as soon as they bend their knee. I'm going to see how low they're going to get. How high is their chest upright? Are they squatting deep? Are they getting deep, but are their ankles rolled in? Are they in extreme like hyperpronation? Are their knees coming together? Are their knees out? A lot of people have to take almost like a sumo squat to get that deep. So I'm going to see just how deep they can get without these alterations that go on.
Jimmy, is all after a warm up, I'm guessing. A proper warm up.
They're not doing this with a load. They're coming.
I understand that, but you're still going to have them. Does someone just walk in and you say, can you do a squat?
Obviously, someone doesn't just walk in. They walk in, I put them on the table, I look at them. But to me, I don't feel like I have to warm them up for this. They're only doing a couple reps. Like I don't have to, they don't have a load in their back. It's pure body weight. I mean,
no, I understand that, but just allow them to be a little bit more flexible, just to loosen up a little bit.
Well, I want to see them in a. I don't want to see them in an over warmed up state, more or less. Like I just want to see them how they are. I want to see them come to me, like with pain. Like if I work with someone that has like a stenosis or a spondylolisthesis, like I just want to see them at that current state. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get them. They're going to get warm through doing it. Again, it's not too rigorous. I'm not timing them. I'm not doing anything. I'm just saying, step out, drop down into a lunge. To me, I don't have to get them overly warm to do that.
Well, let me jump in real quick and kind of go with what Jimmy was saying and answer Tony's question, about the deep squat. If the deep squat all the way, butt to the floor was level 10, just let's say we'll put a number on it, I always like to go through each level individually first, have them, because you're not always going to deal with athletes. And I mean, if you deal with an athlete, you would hope they would be able to get to level 10. But, sometimes you're going to have people walk in that can't get past level 1 or 2, which is a very basic 2-inch knee bend. So I like to go through the levels one by one. And as soon as they, to me, they reach a point of, you know, let's just stop. And you'll know it right away. Legs are caving in. They may not have the strength. They may not have the stability in their knees or hips to even go down that far. You know, at that point, I call it off because I've seen enough. Because it's only going to be severe compensation patterns at that point anyway. For a lot of my older clients, you know, putting them through that wouldn't necessarily be worth it at that point. So I'll take a squat assessment a step further, and I'll put a ball against the wall, like a stability ball, have them lean against that, take a little bit of weight off, and then have them go into a deeper squat. So at least I can see, you know, where some of their mobility issues may be. It may be down at the knee, it may be the hip, it may be the ankle. And we all know the ankle is going to affect everything else up the chain. So I kind of, you know, once I get through those levels, if they go through each level and they get to a, you know, level 9 or 10, butt to the floor, then, you know, I know that I have somebody that's pretty strong, pretty stable, pretty mobile in certain areas, and then I can really fine-tune it. But before that, I don't like to go much further unless I know that they can handle it, if that makes sense.
And to kind of go with what Keith's saying right there, the main thing I tell people when they're in the warm-up, when they're squatting, when lunges, I want you to get to where you're comfortable. And for some people, it will only be a 2-3-inch knee bend. You know, I've had athletes who can't really get that deep. I've had, you know, recreational people that can get deeper. It's just I tell someone, get to where you're comfortable and don't push it. And generally, like, you'll see a lot of people, like some people can maybe get like halfway down into a squat, maybe, you know, like a 45-degree knee flexion angle, and then like you'll see their calves are rising, their whole body's completely over their toes. Then you know when to stop them.
Go ahead. No, I mean, I think that's important that we're talking about this, because I've seen trainers, and I know Tony, you blog about this all the time. It drives you crazy, but you see trainers out there doing things that they have no business doing. But I've seen trainers make people do loaded squats. You know, they got a barbell on their back, and they don't even have a proper 2-inch squat, and they're making him go all the way past 90, and the person, you know, the person looks like they're having a stroke, but they, you know, they'll keep doing it. So there's fitness, quote, I'll use quote around professionals out there that don't even, you know, follow this protocol where they take somebody to a comfortable position. You have to correct, and I know this mobility conversation, but it kind of, they all ties together. You have to correct the issues around the hip and the thigh and the knee and the ankle first, in my opinion, before you even get to putting a load on the back.
So do you guys find yourselves doing more things like split squats and like Bulgarian split squats before you get into weight-bearing squats?
Well, I love single leg work. I think Bulgarian, for if we're talking someone who has limited hip mobility or is deconditioned in general, I think a Bulgarian split squat is going to be a little bit advanced. Mm-hmm. What they should be doing. So
I'm saying like in general, whether you're working with someone like advanced or a beginner, obviously you wouldn't start.
Oh yeah, I mean, like, you know, just doing a simple split squat. I mean, are they able to do a simple split squat? I mean, as Keith said, I hate it when, and I see it all the time. You know, I'll see trainers with a client, and I mean, not only can they do a body weight squat properly, but then they're going to load them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, that makes completely.
Well, you got to use the weight to push them down into the correct.
Yeah, seriously. But it's really dumbfounding. You know, it's like, I mean, even when they unrack the weight, they look unstable.
And you know what I like to do, Kevin, to answer your question, is I'll get a plyo box. You know, it can be depending on the height of the client, but I'll get a pretty high plyo box for people like that even. And this is very beginning stages. And we might as well jump into exercises to help hip mobility, because this does that too.
Yeah.
I'll have them bring their, you know, one of the feet onto the plyo box and just kind of do a lunge, a heightened lunge on that plyo box. So they're getting a stretch of the hip. Mm-hmm. They're also learning how to drive off properly. The opposite leg's getting a hip flexor stretch, and at the same time as they drive up, I'm teaching them to control their core to keep their upper body straight. And as they get better at it, I take some of the height off the plyo box down, down, and down until they're on the floor.
Yeah, by then, I do like the more or less the same thing. I'm a huge fan of partial range of motions, and I think partials aren't used in rehab simply because if you read any common like article, it'll say you have to use full range of motion.
No, I use it all the time.
Exactly.
Are you guys referring to like squatting, or are you talking about with the back leg behind? I'm sorry, I'm confused a little bit.
Everything. everything, yeah, more or less. Okay. Like he said,
well, I was referring more to like just like you would do a normal lunge or split squat, Tony. You would have the back leg behind on the floor.
Right.
You would have the forward leg up on a box a little bit, so the person doesn't have the same amount of load. And it would start off as like a stretch, and then from the stretch, they would just drive up, and they would, you know, kind of extend. Obviously, they're not going to get full extension because they're up high, but it's going to, you know, you're going to stretch the extensors on the one leg, you're going to stretch the hip flexors on the other leg. As they get better at it, I take the box further down,
okay,
until they're finally on the ground, and by then they have enough strength and they have enough stability and mobility around that joint to do a proper lunge or split squat, depending on what you call it.
Okay. And Keith right there is really trying to restore hip flexion, which is excellent. Like, I have a client right now she's had her third hip replacement surgery. And more or less, Kev, this is like what you said about how do I get them to squat, is you have to regroove the entire picture before that. We have a bench, a treatment table that's electronic, so it can go up and down depending on level. So she'll start at a high level. She's, you know, a little more advanced now, but she'll start at a high level, and then each rep I'll gradually bring the table a little bit lower. With her, like, she's not going into a full squat yet. Like, what I'm doing is I'm doing, you know, airplanes. I'm doing bowler squats. I'm doing, you know, things like that to get her glutes strong. I'm cleaning up her ankle mobility. I'm cleaning up some restrictions she has in her six external hip rotators. I'm doing things like that. You have to clear the whole picture. You have to clear her ankle. You have to clear, you know, the adductors and what goes on there, what they're doing to the knee. You have to take this whole partial range of motion approach before you get her into a squat. Is that saying she's not getting strong? No, she clearly is. But like he said, you vary your ranges of motion. You know, just like in strength training, right? If you're curling, you're a lot stronger in the middle or on the top than you are on the bottom. So you have to take that into account.
Right.
And I totally agree with you, Jimmy, because I'll use the same thing. Because, I mean, people often forget that you're going to get, even if we are using partial range of motion, you're going to get a 15 to 25% carryover in other degrees, bottom.
Yeah, exactly, with isometric stuff.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm like you and Keith, I'm using the same thing where I'm having people use partial range of motion. I'm using their usable range of motion. Does that make sense?
Yeah, exactly. And
so I'll even do you know, okay, let's do box squatting, you know, with your usable range of motion. During our rest sets, you know, I'll have them do hip mobility exercises. So I'll have them doing hurdle drills or duck unders or duck overs on the Smith machine. And then I'm also working ankle mobility in the beginning as well, because, you know, as Jimmy and Keith alluded to, ankle mobility is huge.
Yeah.
As far as how that is going to affect the hip. So, and I've even seen Eric working with a lot of the athletes at Excel. He had a couple of videos of this guy from the CFL that he's working with. I think, Kevin, you might have met him a couple of weeks ago. But, you know, he sent up an email to myself, and I think maybe Jimmy and Keith were on there, Bill Hartman, Mike Robertson, saying, here's this guy at the beginning. You know, he had horrible ankle mobility, worked on his ankle mobility, and he got, you could see a very noticeable difference in the depth he could get on his squat. So I think ankle mobility, but I do that right in between. So even when we're resting, so to speak, you know, we're doing something useful with our time.
Just to get the female side of things, I know, Jen, you work with a lot of females. Is this a problem that you see in many of your clients?
It is. You know, where most of my clients are distance, I have some local clients, and I train them in my home, in my basement. And but as far as, like, my distance clients, for instance, I will give a full range of exercises, a full range of exercises for a woman to do. And, you know, I always request, well, I don't always. I mean, if they're conditioned and trained, I mean, I kind of know what they're going to be able to do. But if I have a hunch that they haven't trained as hard or as much, or they're not as familiar, or they're older, or have explicitly told me that they've had this knee problem or this hip problem, I will request them to go ahead and do them lighter weighted and partial, and I ask for their feedback. They'll email me back, and they'll say, such and such hurt in my knee when I was at about this degree of body weight squat. And so I have most, in order to be working toward, over the next 3 months to a year, to be able to be working toward the loaded squats, mm-hmm. loaded, you know, walking lunges, alternating lunges and stuff like that. I have them doing, you know, lightweighted exercises always get such a bad rap when you're talking in context of building muscle and becoming a lot stronger. But when we're talking about injuries or weak hips, weak knees, all these kind of things, then that's where, like you guys have been talking about, lightweighted partial exercises come into play. So I have all of my girls are working toward being able to do that full loaded squat. They may be one woman may be able to start out with like maybe only 40 pounds on her back and only be able to go down 45 degrees before it hurts. So I'll have her work on a full range body weight squat properly, and I'll have her put maybe just hold a 10-pound dumbbell in each hand and just work that partial range just until, and then a lot of stretching. You'd be dumbfounded. Most of my women, when they come to me, unless they're already weight training or have been doing like aerobics and cardio for a long time, even my runners, they don't stretch. You know, they think that they're already stretched. And so I instigate just massive sessions of stretching. I'll tell people to do, to stretch out, you know, whatever stretch it is that I'm telling them to do, a hip flexor stretch. Another thing that I like to do, have you guys ever heard the term three-way hip works?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Basically, yeah, I like to have all of my clients that have issues with their hips be swinging their leg back and forth, front to back, bringing their knee up and rotating it and in and out to get that mobility going. But it is a huge problem with women. That's why a lot of women aren't strong, is because they haven't weight trained and they've sat a lot. Maybe they've been at an office job. Maybe they've nursed a lot of kids and they've been sitting down nursing, you know, and their backs are kind of hunched over, and that contributes to the problem. But as you guys have been talking, I keep thinking to myself, yes, I utilize these light-weighted and partial ranges of motion a lot to help correct these problems.
Yeah, and don't underestimate the value of like isometric exercises. Like I know Tony mentioned ankle stuff, and if everybody goes to the FitCast Insider, you can download a great ankle article interview.
Wink,
like that plug, Kev. But back to isometrics, like people, everybody wants to be so fast and today and to like help rehab people, and it's great, but like isometrics are huge. Like everybody wants to go and do a like certain like glute med exercises. Put somebody on a bare foot in a single leg stance. That's gonna fire it as much or more than anything, and that's gonna be a step back. Like I think we try to advance ourselves too far. Like you'll see clients will put people on their hands and knees and make them do a bird dog. Well, you know what? If their glute's not firing, they're using all hamstring and lumbar erectors to get that hip extension.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
You know, put somebody in isometric, make them do their arm. Or make them just do their leg, or make the arm go out and, you know, perturbate them, which means like to tap them, like push them. Don't underestimate the value of isometrics, like in the connotation of a squat. Like just have somebody sit into their comfortable position and hold it. I mean, you're going to get a 10 to 15 degree carryover. So I think we're so far advanced to pushing people through. And I think the problem with assessments today is that it's become the popular term. And everybody's trying to do it. Like, there's people that are selling internships that do assessments. And, like, there's a lot of that going on today. And at the same time, if everybody's so good at it, why do you see people recommending someone put, you know, a light ball or a foam roller between their legs and a duct into it? Like, to me, it doesn't make sense. Like, you obviously don't understand how the body works if you're trying to do that. So, like, I think just with assessments, partial range of motion, isometrics, you know, that's what it is. Keith, do you kind of want to go into a little bit now, like more or less like the muscles that affect the hip? Do you want to do that real quick so we don't bore people with anatomy too much?
Well, yeah, I mean, I can, and I want to kind of, I'll jump into it and piggyback what you said at the same time. I think a big thing that people miss in mobility, they think mobility, they automatically think what? Flexibility, that's everybody's.
Yeah.
And I take a different approach, and I think a lot of people, at least that understand the anatomy, do that. Mobility is just as much for me about activating the right muscles as it is stretching the right muscles. I mean, you know, I spent a lot of work with the antagonist muscles, which are, you know, if you don't know what that means, they're just the opposite muscles from the muscles you're trying to quote stretch or get more flexible or mobile. For example, if I'm trying to if I'm trying to work on my hamstring or my glute flexibility or mobility, sometimes I'll work on activating certain types of hip flexors or my psoas or something like that, because a lot of times just getting that kind of muscle activated is going to help, you know, it's got to you know, free up the antagonist. So
yeah, you need the right muscles firing at the right time.
Yeah, mobility goes both ways. So to carry that over into what Jimmy just said about the anatomy and what he kind of already talked about, Jimmy talked a lot about isometrics, and he talked about how in the hip it's important to do a single leg stance, and you know, I'll go along with that. You know, I do a lot of glute medius work, glute minimus work, and a lot of the TFL and some of the psoas, which is another hip flexor. Not to bore everybody with the anatomy out there, but those are small muscles that most people neglect, and those are small muscles that most people that what I call they go to sleep. We sit all day, and when we sit all day, those things kind of deactivate. So I always like to do what Jimmy says, you know, activate those muscles. I'll do it right in the beginning. I'll have the person take a one-legged stance, keep their eyes open, look at me, because they're going to want to look at their foot. Eyes up, eyes closed, which is going to make it a lot harder. There's going to be a lot more proprioception going, a lot more, you know, hip firing going on. And then I'll even have them do, like, if they're capable, have them do, like, a 1 or 2 inch squat and then hold the squat. And then maybe we'll have a catch. I'll throw the ball to them and I'll throw a medicine ball different ways, which is really going to fire up that hip. Almost automatically, the first thing you say to me is, my hip's burning, my calf's burning, my quad's burning, you know, and that's good. Those are muscles that, and the reason they're burning is because they're not used to doing, they're not used to firing. So you know you're on the right page when you deal with those people. You know, about the only time you'll see me break out some unstable surfaces are for people like that that really need to get those activated. I'll bring out, you know, some kind of a pillow or a Bosu or something like that, have the same type of thing on those mats. Again, we're trying to improve the proprioception, which is going to improve the activation of the hip. From there, we can talk about mobility. So you have to get those certain muscles fired up first before you can get the hip stable and before you can get the hip mobile. If that makes any sense,
guys,
what I just
said. Did any of you guys read that article I just put out on Muscle with Attitude? They got back.
I did read it.
I did not.
I did read it. So, you know, I was talking about the same thing that, you know, was just mentioned, the glute amnesia, you know. Sometimes the problem is just, it's just not in the glute, it's in the hips. You got to get them loose. So.
Sure.
And it's not just all about stretching, like you said. It's about activating the muscles. So, yeah.
People forget how to really use their glutes. And I'm writing an article right now about the gluteus medius. And to me, like, that muscle saves the world. I have fixed things from, you know, ankle to opposite shoulder to hip stuff, just turning that muscle on. And I think two areas you have to look at hips. I mean, I know Keith talked about what he does for the glutes, and yeah, you can do, you know, your single leg stands, you can do your unstable surfaces, you can do floor grips, you know, with your toes gripping the floor, things like that, everything that the glute medius to fire. But two areas that I've looked at a lot in people is, first you have to look at, like, their rectus abdominis, so, you know, the six pack muscles. That area is just gonna be balled up with trigger points. Why? Because everybody's doing their crunches all day. You know, that's, everybody wants to do their ab work, so they do that. But that area is going to be really balled up. It's actually really easy to palpitate. If you get, like, I won't get into to where it is, but that muscle is going to be locked up, and that's going to have a ton of effects up and down the chain on what goes on at the hip, because that's going to put us more into an anterior pelvic tilt. And so you can clean up the hips all you want, but if you go and just touch somebody's stomach, like if your clients allow you to, I know a lot of people are kind of squirmish about it, but if your clients allow you to do it, you'll find so many trigger points on their stomach. And if you can clean the stomach up, that fixes a lot of patterns. And also, if you look at their piriformis, because if you look at the function of the glute max and the glute medius, amongst other things, is to be an external hip rotator. Those muscles are weak. Those muscles are shut off. Our piriformis, simply because we're in hip internal rotation throughout the day, our piriformis is firing a lot more than it should, so that muscle's locked up. If you clean that up with people, you find generally hip mobility goes right through the roof. Just simply making someone stand and try to take their heel on their left foot to the toe of their right foot, and then the big toe on the left foot to the heel of the right. You'll see some issues going on there. People can't internally and externally rotate on a fixed femur. So clean those two issues up, I found, clean up the hip. So, Kev, now you can say the obligatory, you know, waking up after Jimmy's anatomy thing, like you say every other week.
I was about to, actually.
Yeah, because you're a jerk.
Well, I like it to have maybe like a 2.5-3 minute cap, and then we can just move on.
Well, that was like under 60 seconds. I talk fast, dude.
Yes,
it felt like 3 minutes.
Can I jump in real quick again? I mean,
certainly.
You know, but Jimmy talked about cleaning things up, and there's a lot of controversy out there about, you know, whether you should foam roll before, foam roll after. But, you know, I'm going to use foam roll. I'm just going to talk about tissue, you know, tissue extensibility and how you get to that, whether it's a massage or whether it's a foam roll. I actually like to dig into some people's piriformis before they squat, because they do have, and it helps tremendously. I've seen numbers go way up because they have these mobility problems. Like Jimmy said, piriformis are locked up. I'll do some tissue work on their piriformis, release those areas, and then get right to the squat. And it's unbelievable just, you know, how they increase. They're, you know, not only the range of motion, but, you know, everything kind of falls into place there. So sometimes I think if we talk about hip mobility, we have to talk about, you know, tissue as well, and not just stretching and doing your leg swings and the thing. All the things we talked about are important, but also we have to talk about soft tissue, foam rolling, and those areas as well. And you know, Tony, please jump in here because I know you know you spent a lot of work on that. But I think soft tissue work is extremely important in this whole equation, along with everything else.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's nothing that I can say you guys haven't addressed already. I mean, yeah. I mean, I tend to foam roll people before, you know, activation foam roll, and then we're off to the races. So I mean, there's nothing I can say you guys haven't already said because I agree with you guys completely.
What I was going to say, going along with what Keith said about cleaning up the piriformis in a squat, I've done that a lot lately too, and you see people like automatically almost be able to fire their glutes more. So what happens if you fire your glutes more than a squat, right? You get lower, you put up more weight right away.
Yep.
So you clean that piriformis up. You also see people will stop compensating with lumbar hyperextension, leaning their body back. So that's actually a really important muscle that no one's addressing. So you clean that up like right before a squat. And like Keith said, tissue quality is huge. Foam rolling should not really hurt as much as it does. Again, when something becomes popular, people take it off and they run with it. It should not hurt as much as it does in people. So, like, that's some area that you're going to have to address. But if it's hurting you to the point that, like, you can't stand it, you shouldn't be doing it.
I agree.
Okay.
So, awkward quietness right there, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know if anyone else was going to jump in. I don't know if you guys want to talk a little bit about just some simple things that people can do on the corrective side of things to just get the ball rolling. I mean, some things that they can do themselves and not have to spend money. I mean, as much as we would like them to go spend money to see someone, a professional, about this.
Sure. Do you guys want to give like three quick ones each so we don't spend all day with it?
Well, I'll give some easy ones that I've had to do because my hip mobility is crap right now. Just like a seated 90-90, which Eric has me doing. Some of the simple 90-90 stretch where I'll try to describe it. You put one leg over the other where you're keeping knee joint at 90-degree angle, and you basically put pressure on the knee that's turned sideways to stretch that hip out.
Like a figure four, kind of?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that's a good mm-hmm. way of explaining it. Also, something that if you have magnificent mobility, something I've been doing to help pretty much get my butt down is doing squat to stance, which you pretty much you have your feet in almost it's wider than a sumo stance. It's pretty much pick up magnificent mobility, and I won't have to describe this, but you have your feet, I'd say, I don't know, what would you guys say, like 6 or 8 inches farther away from your shoulders, maybe?
About, yeah.
Yeah, maybe 10 inches, and you grab your toes, and you sit down like you're going to do a squat, then you try to stand up while you keep your hands holding onto your feet, and you keep doing that motion to try to get deeper in the squat, and then you come back up. You probably do, like Eric has me do, 6 or 8 of them at a time. I can barely do 3 before I have to stand up and take a break for a sec. And something that I forget if you guys talked about it, but something for a good warm up, just for activation, something like the glute bridges, just to get going. You can, if you're warming up, I'm guessing you'd probably want to do more of like a rep style where you do 20 repetitions, something like that. Or if you're not at the gym and you just want to work on it, do some stationary, like do 60-second holds or 30-second holds. Do what you can do to get that stuff activated. Those are some simple things that I can think of it doing. How about Tony?
I will add a tennis ball soft tissue work on the piriformis.
Mm-hmm.
I know since Jimmy and Keith just spent so much time on it, my article, Soft Tissue Work for Tough Guys, I have a picture or a video, I forgot what it is, but I talk about that. So just using a basic tennis ball, which I think pretty much everyone would have accessibility to, so doing that on the piriformis. Like I said, when I'm training people, my big thing is just not to make them feel like a patient. So I hate it when I see trainers with clients who have some kind of corrective stuff they have to be doing. They spend an entire session doing it. They're there to get a training effect. So while that corrective stuff is important, I think you know, doing stuff, you know, in between sets is fine too. So I, like I said, using the Smith machine, doing duck unders or duck overs with the bar, because I mean the Smith machine is the easiest thing to use because it's so easily adjustable. So just doing hip mobility exercises with that. And as well, I'm going to second what you said, Kevin, as far as the squat stands. I use them personally, and I use a lot of them with my clients. So I think those are a great way to help train hip mobility.
Those are helping me a ton over the last week. I'm starting to get all my hip mobility back, and it's like a new life. Not to be too sentimental. Jimmy Smith, what do you got?
Three quick things. First,
I don't know if we need three, Jimmy.
I was just
like
throwing
15?
It out there as a number.
About
one
or two.
I'm just trying to give the listeners their free money's worth. But if you have a pole, it's kind of something you can do at home before you go to the gym. If you just put it in a corner, like a straight pole, end of a broom handle, and actually just put it like back on your butt, kind of like just kind of on the side of your glute. I know it's really hard to describe this, but that'll be kind of like your own. It'll be a little deeper than like doing like self tissue release. But just put it in there and just kind of move back and forth. And no, it looks so odd. Don't do it in the gym. You have a pole behind your butt and you're moving back and forth. But it actually cleans up a lot of like the scar tissue that will be back there, the adhesions back there. And then simply just I have people do what I call pull across opens up. Is they stand up, you know, they'll take their leg, they'll pull it in, get like a glute piriformis stretch with their opposite hand. So if the right leg comes, left leg goes over, and they'll take their right hand, they'll open it up and get an adductor stretch, kind of working antagonistic functions here. So those two are two things. I hope you got the description.
Well, Jimmy, maybe you can get some pictures and throw it up when you post your article this week.
Okay.
All right. What do you got for us, Keith?
Couple quick things I like to do. Going with Tony said, I like to include all my mobility and hip stuff in the warm up, and I think you can do both of those things at the same time, and the person doesn't even know you're doing corrective work. But I like to do what I call a stutter stance squat, where they'll put their feet about a little more in the shoulder width, and right foot will be a little bit in front of the left foot, and then they'll squat down, and then they squat, they're going to turn towards the foot that's ahead of them. And then they're going to come up, and then they switch feet and then turn towards the other one. And what this does, it's going to activate one part of the hip at the same time. It's going to stretch the other part of the hip in an active way instead of just a static stretch, if that makes sense to you guys. And I do the same with lunges, like a side lunge or a 45-degree lunge. As they come down, I have them slowly turn towards the down leg, and that's going to really open up the hips. That's more of an active stretching type of thing. I like to do X-band walks basketball slides, whatever you want to call them, different variations of those, both with their knees straight and their knees bent. I kind of activate, you know, with their feet turned in, they get more of the medius and minimus and those types of things. And then I like to use the, if you guys use a pulley machine, I don't know what else to call it. There's all different names, but I like to do like a choppy motion, and I like to set up people's hips at different angles. If I work with a baseball player, tennis player, somebody like that, and they need hip mobility, I'll actually have them do like a cable chop. But instead of traditional cable chop, I'll spread their legs out more and have them slowly chop. And that's really going to put a lot of emphasis and rotation on the hip and have them come back slowly. And it's going to fire up the glutes as they come down too. And then I'll pull the cable down a little more, so it's more like almost horizontal. And I'll have them do like a baseball swing. And then I have them drive off of their back leg, which is going to activate the back hip, and then they're going to stretch the front hip. And at the same time, they're going to activate what Jimmy already talked about, some of their rectus and some of their obliques and those things all at the same time. So that's like a total hip mobility type of thing as we go along, if that makes sense.
I think it does.
Okay.
We'll finish it off with Jen Heath.
Since I got to go last, you guys kind of took
all the good ones.
Yeah, everything that they just said sounds great. the last two things, the first two of the last that was just talked about with the side squat and side lunge, I do that a lot. I think that those two are great, so you did kind of steal my things there.
Sorry, Jen.
No, it's all good. Another one that's more of an advanced movement. It's really kind of a tough one. My old trainer used to call it Spider-Man's. I don't know if anyone ever refers to it like this. Let me see if I can describe it. You know, does anyone know what I'm talking about?
Exactly. Yeah. Like a long lunge all the way down?
Yes.
Like,
kind of grab your knee? Yes, you're all the way down in a, basically a squat position with your hands on the floor, and you walk yourself clear out and bring your leg clear around to the front. And then while you're in that totally split position, which has obviously got the hips like stretched out completely, then you can bring your opposite, the elbow that's opposite the leg that's out in front, underneath and touch that knee, that opposite knee. It really pulls open that that hip of the leg that's back behind. And then go out, walk back in, and then bring the other leg around. Not only does that one do everything that it should do, but it's I like to give it to women in particular that are needing to work out at home that don't have a gym, that they don't have time to spend 10 or 15 minutes doing corrective hip stuff, that they need it to be in their workout and they need to be doing something that's making their heart rate rise. And that is one in particular that I have found. It's very difficult. If you do 10 or 20 of those in a row, it's just like high-intensity cardio training, but at the same time you're getting the benefit of the hip issues as well. And then just in addition to that, like I said, a lot of my clients, they don't have time to spend individually on this. They're up for 45 minutes or 30 minutes before their kids get up. And so I'll have them put things like stationary lunges with an isometric hold down at the bottom, the hip flexor pull. So switching legs, alternating that. And that in itself, like I said, accomplishes both of those purposes. It accomplishes conditioning and it accomplishes the hip issues. So a lot of things like that to put actually into the workout when they don't have time to spend that separate time on it.
That's great stuff. See, we saved the best for last again, and we got some great content.
You guys all need to go do those Spider-Man. Talk about...
Yeah, me too. I like the Spider-Man. It makes me feel like Tobey Maguire. Which,
wow.
I didn't mean to say that. God.
You look like him too.
I can't believe you just said.
I just didn't want to keep like dead air, and I was gonna stop talking. But you know what?
Should have.
Yeah, I should have. And before we do leave, though, I forgot to do a Black Star Lab Site of Fuse contest this week. So, this is how it's gonna go down. The first person to send me an email at kevin@thefitcast.com will get it. So pretty much the first person that finishes listening to this show. Which, I mean, you should get some credit as well because...
It's going to be a long show.
It is a long show. It's about...
It's a good show.
An hour and... At least an hour and a half long. I don't know yet.
Yeah, I got to eat, man. I'm hungry.
Yeah, I got to eat too. I think we all get to eat. We probably all have to go to the bathroom, the amount of water we all drink. And I think this is a good time to wrap up our show. So for episode number 54, my name is Kevin Larrabee.
This is Tony Genicor.
This is Jen Heath.
This is Keith Scott.
This is Jimmy Smith.
And we'll see you next week. Don't forget to check out thefitcast.com for new content every day this week. And if you're at the Jersey Shore and you want to go on a date with Keith Scott, just pretend you're drowning and he'll come rescue you, you know. And we'll keep playing that Baywatch music in the background. Thanks again, everyone, and we will see you next week. Take care. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Fitcast. Fitcast episode number 54. My name is Kevin Larrabee, and we have a whole new. What's so funny, Jimmy? What?
Well, let's start that one over.
Are you guys like sending messages to each other while we're trying to do this?
No.
I'm innocent. I'm sitting in my van at a park. I'm innocent. I'm not causing a ruckus.
Oh God. All right. Can we try this again? You know, we'll see if it works. Jimmy, just try not to type anything while we're talking. All right. That didn't go too bad.
I liked it.
Yeah. I think it was great.
It was awesome.
Thanks.
You sound really excited.
I went and saw Pirates of the Caribbean. Did you guys go see the third one?
Not yet.
You know what well, I think we should do? I think we should like paste our off-topic discussion at the end of the show, and if people want to listen to it, they can listen to it. If they don't,
oh, yeah.
You want to do that?
Yeah. That's fine.
Wait, what was your idea again?
We'll put all of our off-topic discussion, I'll just cut it out of the show, and I'll put it at the end of like the end of the end music, and people can listen to it if they want. If they don't, they don't have to.
Well, you
That's
did that.
Like listening to the or watching the funny,
yeah,
funny
exactly.
part, you know, at the end of the movie.
Yeah, I used to do that, but I've been
you
too
did that
lazy
before, and it was pretty funny.
Yeah, we had some.
But you guys, problems. When you go see Pirates, you need to be sure to stay after the credits.
Oh, I didn't stay.
What was that? Outtakes?
You didn't stay.
I didn't stay. I, you know, I was in the theater for so long.
I know, it was a long one.
I know, I couldn't sit there.
Well, it was cool. You really missed the cool part.
Should have done some like glue bridges in the.
Yeah, no, don't say anything. Don't say anything.
No, you know what, Jen? Just email me and tell me.
Oh, yeah, I have to because then I'll ruin it for all the other guys.
Yeah, I haven't
seen
it yet.
I don't do that.
Okay.
I watched Alpha Dog the other night. That movie was awesome.
That's good.
Like JT playing a ghetto superstar.
That movie was good.
Justin
it was,
Timberlake?
He's pretty good. He's good in the movie.
What movie is this?
Alpha
Dog?
True
this
story.
Is like
too.
A big movie?
No, it came out like 6 months ago.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, it did. It was more of an independent release, like Cannes Film Festival or something like that, or whatever. But it was at a film festival, and it had somewhat of a big. It had like a limited, like big time release, but
Isn't that what he was What he was training for? And he was trying to.
Yeah, he was trying
something
to
like that.
Him.
I mean, well, I saw him training.
Yeah, you told us that.
He was nothing, but. But no, it is a good movie. It's based on a true story about these kids who, out in California, one kid owes another kid money, and he wouldn't pay, so he kind of kidnapped his little brother, until he paid. But you know, as the kid was kidnapped, I mean, they were kind of like partying. They weren't even, you know, he wasn't even really kidnapped. But then they end up killing him. It, not that that was giving away the movie. I mean, you kind of already know that that's what's gonna happen. But it was a really good movie. So definitely recommend it. My boy JT.
You know what you have to see is have any of you guys seen the Office Space?
Oh my God! Yeah, that's
the old movie Office Space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh
that's
my
God! That's a classic.
That movie is so funny.
Okay, if you like that movie, you have to see Idiocracy, which is by Mike Judge. All right, there's a little bit of backstory to this. It's written and directed by Mike Judge, who did Beavis and Butthead, and he did The Office, Office Space. And basically, this is the premise. It's Luke Wilson. I think it's one of the Wilsons, the one without the messed-up nose. It's that Wilson with Maya Rudolph from Saturday Night Live. And they are part of this military project. They're supposed to be like cryogenically frozen for a year. And it was just some project that they were doing to test out things for soldiers. And what happened was I won't tell you what happened, but they end up getting stuck in the year 2500. And by that point, because all the stupid people were breeding, everyone is like borderline retarded. Like everyone is just like, you know how if you see someone who's just talking, I'm trying not to ruin anything, but everyone's so dumb that they're all like, everyone just watches TV shows where people get kicked in the balls. Like, no, that's the TV show. Okay. It's called Ow My Balls or Ouch My Balls. And everyone's so dumb. Everyone just eats like tacos and they replace their water with Gatorade. So all their plants died because this one corporation that created like this Gatorade stuff was like they were using it to water the plants because everyone thought it was magical because they're like, well, it's got electrolytes and all this stuff. I'm trying not to use like I'm not saying Southern accent's bad, but that's like what the guy was saying, and like the country is run by an ex-professional wrestler, and it's honestly it's so funny. You have it. This movie got screwed because it was supposed to come out in theaters. They only released it to like 100 theaters, so people were like pissed because you couldn't see this movie anywhere, but it was getting amazing reviews. But you can get it on DVD now. It's called Idiocracy. You get it on Amazon, like Netflix, and it's at least as funny as Office Space. It is.
Well, I will definitely watch it. I am a huge Office Space fan.
You'll really like it. It's just the things that it says about current day America, you'll be like, oh my god, we're so screwed. And it's hilarious. Again, I'm not going to give. And for some reason, like, Starbucks became some kind of bordello. I didn't really get that part, but maybe you guys will be able to figure it out.